Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, and welcome to the first official podcast in our revamped Third Thursdays with Ruthie podcast series. First, I want to thank everyone who has listened to or participated in our Third Thursday webinars, which I've been hosting for somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 years. Hard to believe how quickly time flies. We hope you'll enjoy our new podcast format and you will continue to support our efforts to bring you all the hot and relevant news related to labor relations and traditional labor law. As always, if there's a topic you'd like me to cover, let me know. Also, let me know what you think of the new format and any ideas you have to make these podcasts as useful to you as we can. So to start our series, I thought I would share some of my thoughts about talking to your employees about unions and unionization. It's a good starting place since we're at the beginning of a new year, and because I think communicating with your employees is the basis to any effective labor relations strategies. This is not specifically going to be a discussion about what you should say to your employees about unions, although we might touch on that a bit. And we're not going to focus too much on the law or rules about what you can and cannot say, except maybe to give you some context. Today, what I want to talk about is the decision to proactively talk to your employees about unions, about how unions work, and what it means to be represented by a union. So let's first get that legal context out of the way. As we all know, Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act guarantees employees the right to self-organization, the right to form, join, or assist labor organizations, to bargain collectively through representatives, to engage in other concerted activities for the purposes of either collective bargaining or mutual aid and protection. And as we also know, Section 7 also gives employees the right to refrain from any and all of those activities. So a couple things to remember about Section 7. While most employers have at least a basic understanding of these employee rights, there's often the misconception that the NLRA generally only applies to unionized employers. Of course, we know that's not correct. And we know this because oftentimes these rights are exercised before there's ever union representation when employees are in fact trying to organize, or it happens when employees are engaged in concerted activities for mutual aid and protection. And that's mutual aid and protection of their coworkers, even when there's no union present or even when there's no organizing activity. So just as a refresher, mutual aid and protection of coworkers could be complaints about scheduling, about supervisors, or any terms and conditions of work. Under certain circumstances, it could be protests related to matters that concern all workers, such as minimum wage, for example. Or it can even be just one person acting on behalf of fellow employees trying to change something about their work environment. So it's not just the employees who have rights. The U.S. Constitution, as well as Section 8C of the NLRA, guarantees employers the right to express views, to argue, to give opinions regarding unions, as long as those communications don't contain a threat of reprisal or force or a promise of benefits. And this concept is often referenced by two well-known mnemonics. I think we've all heard these. Tips for the things employers can't do and foe the things employers can say. So as a reminder, tips is no threats, no interrogation, no promises, and no surveillance. FOE stands for the things you can share. So you can share facts, opinions, experiences. Sometimes people say examples. But just like many of our constitutional and statutory rights, we have to decide whether we want to and when we want to affirmatively exercise them. It's the same thing here. So that's the question. Should we, as employers, proactively talk to our team members about unions? Should we exercise those rights under Section 8C? Now, I'm not talking about responding to organizing activity, because at least from my perspective, employers should always communicate in some way if there's organizing going on. I think that's a given. I don't think anybody would disagree with me on that point. I'm also not specifically talking about answering questions from employees, because again, from my perspective, employers should always, to the best of their ability, respond credibly to any questions employees may pose. I also don't think that's a controversial position. It's really interesting. If you Google, "Should I talk to my employees about unions?" your search will bring up a lot of resources on Section 7, a lot of resources on Section 8A1, which outlines the potential violations of the Act, 8C, which I just talked about. But there's really not that much out there about whether you should initially talk to your employees about their rights and about your rights. So what I want to talk about today, and it took me a long time to get to the point, but what I want to talk to you about today is whether we as employers should bring up the subject proactively, even when all is well and quiet among our workforce, or at least when we think all is well and quiet among our workforce. And there's certainly different schools of thought. So one of the schools of thought is let sleeping dogs lie. In other words, if none of your employees are talking about unions, leave well enough alone, because we don't want to be the ones to get our associates talking or thinking about unions, right? Sometimes this approach is precipitated by the fact that parts of your workforce are represented by the union and others are not. And the thinking here is we don't want to say or do anything that might be counterproductive to those bargaining relationships. At the other end of the spectrum are those employers who directly and repeatedly communicate their philosophy about union representation, whatever that may be, at orientation, in handbooks, and basically throughout the course of the employment life cycle. For example, they may say something like, "We don't want or think we need a union, and here's why." And that message, it can be as subtle or assertive as the law allows. And of course, there's a lot of real estate in the middle group approach. That might be talking about representation without using the you word, alluding to third parties or the exercises of employees' own voice. And those statements might look something like, "We think our employees can speak for themselves, so we don't think having a third party speak for them makes sense." Or, "We want to work with you directly without a third party's interference." Here's the thing, at least in my opinion, using that word or using that phrase, third party, one of two things will probably happen. Either employees will understand you're talking about unions, and in that case, why not just say the union word? Sometimes using the word or the phrase third party makes people think you're afraid to even say the word or you're afraid of unions. Or on the other side of the coin, employees won't understand what you're talking about when you say third parties, and so your message won't be very effective. So what's the best approach for your organization? All right, having said all that, I'm going to give you my view. It's incredibly simple, extremely precise, and likely highly controversial, at least at first blush, at least when I first tell you. You ready? I don't think employers should ever, in any circumstances, proactively talk about unions to their employees. Period. End of podcast. Have I shocked anybody? Those of you who know me are probably saying, "What's going on here? That can't be right." We know, Ruthie, and we know I'm always advocating for communication, education, training, dissemination of information, transparency. And frankly, for those of you who have ever worked with me, you're going to say, "Wait a minute, you're always pushing us to interact with our employees, hold town hall meetings, give brown bag lunches, and even use social media." So you're saying to yourself, no, this can't be right. Who's this person pretending to be Ruthie? Well, let me take a step back and explain what I mean when I say you should never talk about the union to your employees. Now, first of all, I'm going to admit I cheated a bit for dramatic effect. Although I truly do believe you should never talk about the union to your employees, I do believe wholeheartedly you should always and often talk about your own organization, your company, your hospital, institution, business, school, whatever. And you should always and proactively talk about your organization's philosophy, mission, core values, whatever you want to call it. As part of that discussion about you, you may want to talk about your perspective on unions and union representation. Now, that may sound like a cheap trick that I did, but it was for effect, and I hope it had the effect desired. But I think you'll be surprised when I tell you that in my experience, at least 75% of the time, when I'm called in to assist employers relating to unions and union organizing, members of management, let alone the executive team, can't articulate the company's philosophy in relations to unions. And oftentimes, that's because no one's ever talked to them. No one's ever talked about it in a meaningful way. So I am a zealous advocate for communicating to your employees and with your employees from the very beginning and continuing through their entire work cycle in a multitude of ways, using a variety of vehicles about your business, about your mission, about your competitors, about your failures or your shortcomings or your obstacles, and most importantly, about your relationship with your team. Dare I say it? What is your vision? Talk about your vision. What do you want your work environment to look like? How are you going to get there? What are the obstacles or stumbling blocks that either do or could keep you from reaching that vision? Yes, I believe very strongly you should talk about yourselves. Talk about your accomplishments, talk about what's good, what can get better, and most of all, talk about your vision for your relationship with your employees. And yes, you should be very proactive about that. Don't just start in orientation. Start with your recruiting, talent acquisition, and make sure to re-communicate that vision in everything you do. I know I'm older, it's an old phrase, but it applies. Talk the talk, walk the walk. Now here's the catch. You can't communicate a concept you don't have, and you can't communicate a concept effectively unless everyone is on the same page. That means you might have to do some work before you can even start communicating to your employees about your vision. I'm going to give you some homework. The next time you're out with members of your leadership team, whether it's executives, managers, even first-line supervisors, I'd like you to ask them a couple of questions. First, ask, what is, insert your company's name here, what is, for example, ABC company's vision when it comes to its relationship with employees? Ask them that question. My guess is this will probably stump quite a few people. Maybe that's because of how the question is worded, but you get the idea. However you want to word that question, ask it. Can your people articulate how your organization wants to interact with its employees? Can they define what kind of relationship you want to have with your workers? All right, so that's the first question. Then ask, what is, insert your company's name here, what is ABC company's position on unions? Get the answer, see what they say. And here's the kicker, the last question you should ask. Ask them how those two concepts interrelate. You will learn a lot about not only what your vision is or what your vision has been communicated, how your vision has been communicated, but you'll also get a much better understanding of how your folks out in the field see those two concepts of relationship with employees and position on unions, seeing how they interact. It's January, and there's no better time than now to take a look at what your mission statement, core values, philosophy, whatever you call it, look at it and make sure it truly reflects your vision. And of course, part of that vision is how you want to define your relationship with your team at all levels. If you don't think having a union come between you and your employees is the right answer for you, say that. Explain it. Explain why you believe that way and demonstrate why your perspective makes sense in your vision. But you shouldn't be talking about the union. You should be talking about yourselves. You should be talking about your organization. And yes, you can talk about why a union doesn't make sense in that vision. Talk about your expectation of your team members. Discover what expectations they have of you and of management. And then outline the path to achieve or maintain that vision. Then incorporate that vision into all of your communications, into your operations, into training, even into things like safety. The bottom line here is this. If everyone in your organization doesn't know what your vision is in terms of your relationship with your team, including your perspective on unions, you've put your organization at a disadvantage. Here's why. First, it means your leadership management team may not be on the same page. Second, if at some point you do have union organizing, you'll have to spend a lot of some very precious time, not only figuring out what your vision is, but figuring out how to communicate and communicating it to your workforce. Finally, if you don't know what your vision is, then it's highly likely you're not living it. And that might be the reasons your employees will look for representation or a voice elsewhere. To quote one of my favorite movies, Goethe, "Now go do your best, be bold, and mighty forces will come to your aid." See you next month.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.